Hello, you're listening to the Bus Boss Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Andrew Gamba. I've got with me Lewis Kemp.
How you doing, Gamba? It's good to be back. Or is it?
I've been better. And I've also got with me Callum Scott. Hello, Callum.
Hello, it's good to be back.
Victorious manager, Callum Scott.
Ah, thank you very much, Lewis.
Can you explain to the listeners what I'm meaning here?
Ah, well, of course, I've just started my Cinder League team that maybe some will be aware of, the Grange Amateurs, and we had our first competitive game yesterday and won 4-0, so it was a very, very pleasant evening for myself, but unfortunately not pleasant for any Hibs supporters.
Sad. What we're doing, we're going to put a link to the Facebook group in the Facebook page in the description. So if you want to find out how KC, I mean, let's be serious here. Football manager, amateurs actually managing a football team. That's some real alpha. That's some real alpha shit right there. So there'll be a link to the Facebook page in the description. So this is probably going to be appearing in your podcast feed either on Friday or Saturday, which isn't a normal day, because we're deciding to do a European special. Yay! Half the podcast has gone away to Amsterdam, so most of the boys that haven't gone to Europe are actually going to stay home and complain about Europe. And I think, you know, in true Brexit fashion, I'm right in thinking most of this... No, never mind. Right. Where do we want to start, boys? Do we want to start with Celtic, since this is quite a Celtic-centric panel?
David Davis's resignation to start with, I think. Nah, just joking. Aye, Celtic it's got to be.
Let's just get out of the way, I suppose.
Celtic out of the Champions League 3-2 on aggregate to AEK Athens. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the goal scorers for AEK Athens. Brito? Levaja? Anybody want to help?
No, absolutely not.
I know Scott Sinclair scored for Celtic in the away leg, losing 2-1. That's it. Champions League over in the third qualifying round. Lewis, what do you think?
I mean, where do you even start with this one?
Just start with the game. Okay. Just start with the game itself, and then we can kind of expand onto wider things we want to rant about.
Well, thankfully, I actually didn't get to watch the game. I watched the first 45 minutes. I was at the Stenhouse Muir game on Tuesday, which is, in hindsight, one of the best decisions I've made this week. So I missed a good chunk of, well, the majority of the second half. I just... Obviously, I watched it back, but I just... It was expected, almost. Mm-hmm. I think... We went into it. Obviously, it's not been a great week for Celtic going into it. The game itself, just I think it was just silly mistakes, soft goals again, and very blunt in attack, which is just, I think that just kind of sums it up for me. Just didn't look like scoring, and to be honest, we had a lot of possession. We did have a lot of chances, to be fair, but just. Again, didn't look like scoring. I think when Dembele came on, we did look a bit sharper. But other than that, I think we were quite poor. I think defensively, obviously, the problems are well documented now. Mm. But again, just need to look at the goals that we conceded. Just staggering, absolutely staggering.
The first one's an absolute is an absolute peach, because there's that still photo where you can see there's the two rows of four. And there's no black and yellow.
If you hadn't watched the game, you would just have no clue how on earth somebody has actually scored for there. But alas, obviously, Athens somehow, or Celtic, or should I say, somehow managed to fuck that up. So, not a great night for Celtic, but for me anyway, quite a predictable one. I was not expecting anything great going into that one.
I mean, it's almost a case of there was a kind of, you've talked about how being a difficult week for Celtic, and the problems almost started before the game kicked off on Wednesday with the first leg. I don't know, I mean, how much you want to divulge of there was, you know, myself, yourself, Lewis, and former member Hamish Carton walking to the game when we found out that John McGinn had gone to Aston Villa, and everyone was raging, like, just with the news of that coming through before going to the game, and it just kept going the whole week.
Well, to be fair, I think it actually maybe started earlier than that, because did Rodgers not come out in his presser and just kind of kick everything off?
Yeah.
Just throw a pipe bomb in there and just start the glorious worst week in Rodgers' history.
Sitting down on the ramp in a stone cold t-shirt.
You could argue. Aye. No, I mean, obviously, I don't think we were too optimistic going into it. There had been a lot of rumours about John McGinn leaving Hibs to go to Aston Villa, even though Celtic had the best part of probably a month and a good bit. In fact, probably you could argue the whole January until the last week of the English transfer window, when Villa actually paid attention. It took them a couple of days, a week maybe, to get it sorted for us. We just seemed to drag our heels in with it. I think the McGinn one for me was quite a big factor in the heart's loss. I think you're crying out for a guy like McGinn in a game like that. Obviously, as I said, the heart's loss was another part of this week, and all kind of culminated with the tragedy, the Greek tragedy in Athens.
I mean, you don't want to like play too much of, like, you don't want to almost get into that whole kind of revisionist history thing, but considering Celtic drew the first leg 1-1 and it was against 10 men, the result out in Athens was a formality, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it before. We've seen teams come to Parkhead and maybe not look spectacular, and then at home they just totally steamroller over us. I mean, that was the case with Zenit last year. I don't think they were outstanding at Parkhead, but we went over there and they absolutely hammered us. I think what makes the Athens result even worse is that I wasn't even in that game. Their home game. Sorry, the game in Athens. I still wasn't too impressed with them. I felt they were beatable. That's got to be the most frustrating thing.
They were good at what they did, but they weren't that great. which is really strange. I was speaking to one of my pals about this as well, and I'm saying, like, the way that they played and how they went about it, they were a better team than Celtic. But surely they shouldn't have been a better team than Celtic. Surely Celtic should have the resources there where... that's not a problem.
Well, I think if you saw it, I mean, I'll just go into it, because I know before the podcast, we've been scutting around the issue a wee bit, I know before the podcast, Casey mentioned, he said to me, just go in on Lawwell, I think was his quote.
Lywell, sorry.
I mean, to be fair, no. I don't think it's just exclusively the board's fault or whatever this week has been at Celtic or whatever this transfer window has been at Celtic. I think a lot of people deserve... I think the blame should probably be shared around, and I think certainly Rodgers deserves a part of that blame. The recruitment at the club, I think the scouting, Lee Congerton, however it works out. To be fair, we don't actually know, but whoever it is that identifies the players does need to share a wee bit of the blame. And obviously,
see on that,
the board,
Kim, quickly. Sorry to come in, just going to say a wee minor part before you go full on machine gun to Lowell here. But see, just on that, obviously, I know Celtic signed the boy of the day for Man City, wasn't it?
Arzani.
Yeah, but you're looking before that, right? And there are three permanent signings this window. Edward, Scott Bain, Izaguirre, right? Three guys who have all had a connection to the club prior, you know what I mean? Obviously, Bain and Edward were on loan last season and they've just made those permanent deals. Obviously, I know it's splashed £8 million in Edward. And Izaguirre coming back, you know, like, it's just like, I mean, fair enough, like, it's an alright kind of, he's there when you need him kind of thing, dependable, but me and you spoke about it, Kemp, he's not got to improve Tierney. Tierney, you're bringing a left back that's willing to challenge Kieran Tierney. But then again, obviously, Tierney doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that become complacent anyway, but you know what I mean. So, but you're just like, imagine talking about this at the start of the window, or at the end of last season, post Scottish Cup final. Every Celtic fan would be laughing at you, saying, aye, absolutely no chance, that'll be our only three signings, you know what I mean? And it's just totally, if I were a Celtic fan, I'd be absolutely seething, because there's, I love Christopher Ayer, he was excellent at us and a right good player and he'll have a big future, but you can't, obviously I know Ayer didn't play in Athens, did he?
No, he was suspended. It was Semyonovic, who actually looked worse than Hendry.
Yep. Well, there you go, but the point stands, I mean, that you, and I know Boyata's threw his toys at the pram and all that patter, but I mean, when you're going in to go for another league campaign, you know, try to win the league and try to progress in Europe, you're not going to do that with Jack Hendry and Christopher Ayer, and I don't mean that any harm to the two players. I mean, they need somebody else there as a leader, because Simunovic, I mean, know that he's young, but they've not got a right proper experienced centre-half. It's just it's absolutely shocking, and the worst it is, the problem about centre-half's been there for Rodgers come in, so that's been 2 years that it's always been a problem area for Celtic, and it's just nothing's been done about it.
I mean, make no bones about it, the defensive issues with Celtic is definitely the big one. Certainly, the two centre backs, it's been an issue, as you said, since Rodgers came in, and frankly, just hasn't been addressed. It's just not been addressed still. In terms of what you were saying earlier about competition like Tierney and stuff like that, it's absolutely spot on. It's not just guys like that. Think about it this way. If we hadn't have bought in Cham last year, where would we be now? And just remember last year, a lot of the kind of reaction to the signing, it was like, oh, do we need another midfielder? We've just went a season unbeaten. Our midfield was excellent. We had goals all over the place. Why do we need another midfielder? Can you imagine how poor we would be now if we didn't have him in? You need to bring in players to challenge the players that are already there for that competition, especially that left-back position where Tierney is... He's already replaced Azagiri. Like, Azagiri is no threat to him whatsoever. So, and I get what Celtic fans are saying. Well, to some extent, I get what they're saying in terms of who's going to come in as backup. But I don't know. I think you can definitely find a young, hungry left back, in Scotland, in England, they exist. It's just a matter of doing a wee bit of research, doing a wee bit of scouting, and trying to find the players. I think as well. Just in terms of the board, I think the big issue there is that we've seen it before. It's a pattern that has emerged with Celtic time and time again. And I know obviously fans of other clubs will probably listen to this and thinking, what's going on here? Like, you're complaining you've won every trophy available since Rodgers.
Back to back trebles, mate. Imagine this was the 90s, man. I had to suffer through the 90s.
But the fact is, like, you've seen this happen before. You've seen Celtic fail to strengthen when they are as good as they are at the moment. And I don't know, it's this thing of this pattern keeps emerging where we'll back a manager first season, and then the following seasons we just won't back him. He'll eventually get fed up and he'll leave. The exact same thing happened with Lennon, the exact same thing happened with O'Neill. It didn't happen with Strachan, because
I would say that's incredibly debatable, because there was a January transfer window where
Gordon Strachan wanted
Stephen Fletcher and ended up with Willow Flood, and there was a January transfer window just there where it looks as if he wanted a decent centre-half and he's ended up with Jack Hendry. So I think there's an incredible parallel going there.
I think, that's fair enough, but I think just, obviously, my point was that Strachan came in under the pretense of, we're downsizing here, so... But I get what you're saying, we downsized and then we're trying to downsize even more failing to sign a guy like McCarthy or Fletcher or whatever, and opting instead to sign Willow Flood. That is a severe downsizing. I think the recruitment, the players that we have brought in have been subpar. Even Arzani, you kind of made that as an example of somebody that doesn't fit into this kind of oh, he's been at the club before. Arzani took like a month to get over the line, and literally, obviously he was at Melbourne City. Man City have the connection there. They brought him in, and they were immediately going to loan him out to Celtic. That story broke. In fact, Rodgers talked about it in his press conference like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and this is now just it getting announced. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's taken him an age to get any transfers done, and even transfers where a certain chief executive has his son or whoever the fuck it is at Man City. As well, there's connections there. Like, there's a pattern. I'll maybe just stop my rant here, and I'll maybe just let Gamba come in. But I'm not happy.
I think you can learn a lot by looking to the past. And Celtic in these Champions League qualifiers have never blitzed them, ever. The closest Celtic came to comfortably getting through the qualifiers was the first year Neil Lennon had to go through them. They beat Helsinki and they beat Helsingborg. They did very well. Every single season after that, it has been an absolute nightmare. The season after that was Karagandy, where Virgil van Dijk and Stephen Moyakolo basically looked as if they both finished their Celtic careers that night. God. One of them, thankfully, didn't. The season after that was Ronnie Dyla's first time in charge. After a stunning comeback at Murrayfield to draw 4-each away at Warsaw, Celtic are eventually put out by Maribor. You can say that's down to inexperience, but that Celtic team wasn't particularly great and had lost a lot of good players. Season after that, it's Malmo. Rodgers takes over. Notice a theme. With a shifting back four, basically, ends up with Owen O'Connell and Kolo Touré going out to Israel and somehow not throwing away a 3-goal lead. last year, I remember the three of us watched Celtic versus Astana over in Kazakhstan. Celtic went over there with a 5-goal advantage and played near Beaton and Christopher Eye are centre-backs. Neither of those two are a centre-back. I think that's just commonly accepted. Ayers played a lot of time at centre back, but he was brought in as a midfielder.
He's been now converted to a centre back, but I see what you're saying, because that was one of the stipulations when he came to us on loan, that was that he had to play centre back. But no, I take your point.
Playing him alongside Nir Beaton that night almost like gave me a heart attack. Like, I could actually feel it coming on that night, and we looked at that and we said Celtic are going to get absolutely slaughtered if they don't buy a decent centre back in the Champions League. They didn't buy a decent centre back and they got slaughtered. A year later, you can't really say that Celtic have strengthened any of these things. Now, the problem is, against Athens, Celtic only scored 2 goals, but a half decent defence would have kept that team out. They weren't particularly good going forward. Celtic were just incredibly, incredibly poor defending, and it's been a problem for a very, very long time now. These Champions League qualifiers aren't easy, and by the nature of their design, they're getting a lot harder. And I think there's maybe a feeling that we can sneak through them each year, and I think people at Celtic have maybe underestimated the rest of the teams in that qualifying group, because it's never been easy in the past, and it's harder now, and Celtic barely scraped through most years.
That's the key factor for me, is that, as you said, it's not been easy in the past, but you think now it's 4 qualifying rounds you have to go through. Obviously, like, if Celtic had won this tie, they would have went through and played Malmo, which, to be honest, Vidi. I think with some of the teams we've played in the playoff round, I don't think that's insurmountable, but you think you're playing in your second last qualifier, you're playing a team like AK Athens, like, that's not easy in the slightest. And I think what's happened is they have severely underestimated this season, but they've also severely underestimated the last couple of seasons, and I think they've just been lucky that they've got a manager that has, let's be honest, it's Dyla's team. Whether you agree with the recruitment since Dyla or not, it's essentially Dyla's team with a few exceptions. And it's down to Rodgers for improving that team. But
I believe it was John McGinley from the Grand Old Pod saying that the back four that played against AK Athens was basically the same that played against Molde in the Europa League a few years ago that lost 3-1.
Oh my goodness.
But you replaced Dedrick Boyata with Jack Kendry.
Oh god.
Yeah, that'll be right, won't it? So, Lustig, Tierney,
Simunovic
and Boyata. So it's actually, you could argue that since that, well, so it's got worse then since Molde.
Which is quite impressive when you think about it. Which is a testament to the kind of manager that Brendan Rodgers is. That you don't have the absolute fear you have going into that game that we're going to get slaughtered here.
But I see as well though, because I don't want to just like make this a kind of, or kind of the blame here totally lies on the board. As much as I kind of made that out in whatever statement I was trying to make earlier on, I think Roger still has to take some of the blame as well, because the fact is the recruitment hasn't been good, and you can say it is Lee Congerton or you can say it's whoever it is the scouting at Celtic, but end of the day, it's just I think Rodgers does have to take a wee bit of the quite a lot of the blame for the recruitment, because the majority of it hasn't been great.
He must have some say in who he brings in, because my understanding was in the first season that Sinclair and De Vries and Toure were his guys. Those were the guys he wanted, and Celtic brought them in, and I would say, I'd say you're batting over 500 of them. I'd say 2 out of 3 of them were a success.
Yeah. But then you look at it now, and we've brought in, obviously, Missonda, Ben Yu, do you remember him? Kouassi, Hayes, Hayes has been unlucky with injuries and stuff.
Hayes has been good every game he's played. He's played 4 games, probably.
I don't know. It's quality signings you need to be bringing in, and I think the main thing is that the defence hasn't been strengthened at all since he's came in. If anything, it's been weakened. I'd say
it's been weakened since Toure left. I think the defence got a lot better when Toure came in. I'm convinced Celtic would not have qualified for the Champions League that season if Kolo Toure wasn't playing for us.
O'Connell was playing beside him, was he not?
O'Connell was playing beside him.
So this is the same thing.
It chops and changes all the time. But I do think once Toure stopped playing for Celtic, it went downhill. But that's a very brief period of time.
I think it's a consistency, I think. Even if... because that's the thing. I think we've had okay centre-backs. We've had decent partnerships over the year, obviously. Denier and Van Dijk is probably the most notable one, but you remember that was only one season that lasted. We've had guys that maybe had one or two good seasons. Kelvin Wilson here or there.
Kelvin Wilson and Effie Ambrose was the best centre back partnership Celtic have had in 2 decades.
I think you look at that. There's not been a consistent partnership there, and I think even for let's say 3-4 years, there's not been a consistent partnership for that kind of length of time. It's just not happened, and I think for a team like Celtic, you probably need that. And it's been an area team that has weakened since Rodgers came in, and I think as well that the signings everywhere else in the pitch, they've been pretty subpar and are not challenging the players that are already there.
Callum,
yes.
Are we crybabies? Do we have anything to be upset
yes,
about?
Yes, we are crybabies.
To an extent, in regards to speaking on behalf of the rest of Scottish football here, they'll be thinking, oh, I wonder what Celtic are moaning, that kind of thing. But no, but I can totally understand your frustration, because when you look at the level of money that Celtic get for getting into the Champions League and stuff, it's massive money to miss out on. But the money that you've banked for the last 2 years should be like, you know what I mean? Surely that cash, there's got to be a couple of million there to spend in our actual centre back. No compers and stuff. I know, but was it a million spent in him?
I think so. I think the thing with Comper as well is that it's just immediately you just know Rodgers didn't fancy him. Like, he just didn't fancy him for whatever reason.
He couldn't even play in Europe anyway, because he was already tied with Leipzig. Like, so it was the most bizarre transfer ever. Well, not ever, obviously, that's an overstatement, but very pissy business nonetheless. Very poor business. But no, I can totally understand Celtic fans' frustration on that. But and also I would like to make a note that I am owed an apology after the weekend's podcaster, because whilst we were speaking, we were talking about how many Scottish teams we were hoping would be in Europe, and I said, well, I hope two will be there, but I'd say at least one anyway. And then they're like, oh, well, Celtic are already guaranteed that. I goes, what, is that right? And then they said aye, because they said that even if Celtic get put out, they were automatically in the Europa League, but they still get the playoff to
embarrassing
win Europe,
aren't they? Embarrassing. Nobody read my article in a red point of view. Embarrassing. They would have understood the whole qualifying process if they had.
Well, apologies for that. However, so I looked like a clown in the last podcast, whereas I was actually right, so.
They are the clowns.
Except I think I probably called it the Fair City Cup or something.
UEFA. UEFA Cup.
the UEFA? So I just put that on record there as well. But no, can totally understand appreciations for the Celtic fans. Rodgers hasn't been backed. I mean, as you've just said, it's just the exact same team in mistake. Well, the back four, the poor back four for the last 3 or 4 years, man. You know what I mean? We're like one change here and there. It's unacceptable, and no, I can totally understand the frustrations of the Celtic support, but hey-ho.
Right, let's very quickly before we... Well, maybe not very quickly before we move on. I mean, Lewis, if you want to just tear this up into shreds, you can as well. Celtic will be playing Suduva in the Europa League qualifier.
Lithuanians.
In the UEFA Cup.
Yes.
When we reached the UEFA Cup final that season. The road to Seville.
Well, was that the team you beat like 8-0 or something?
10-1. I think so.
10-1,
They overcame a big Baltic derby to get to this stage.
Revenge.
A lot of people were saying, oh well, if Celtic reach the Europa League group stages, oh there'll be some cracking draws in there.
I don't know. I looked at some of the expected teams and still looks fucking hard, like. And I think we would be second seeds, but I don't think that's any guarantee at all.
No,
because you end up having a Chelsea or something in your group, like that's an absolute nightmare. And then you could actually have a Celtic, because this is the thing that I'm a bit worried about, is that you're having a lot of fans saying, oh well, if there is one silver lining to get knocked out of the Champions League is that you're now in the Europa League and you won't have to face any of these humiliating 5-0, 7-1 defeats.
It's like, because Chelsea aren't going to, you know, bring a decent team to Parkhead. Arsenal aren't going to be fired up when they end up playing at Celtic Park, or when there's, you know, Christ knows what, 10,000 in the away end of the Emirates. No, that won't fire anyone up for a game of football.
To be fair, obviously, a record against English teams is fairly decent. I can't see an English team coming over and smashing us like they did, what PSG did last year. But still, I think the point remains that the calibre of some of these teams is nothing to be confident about.
Particularly, I don't think Arsenal would want to welcome Celtic to
back to the Emirates after
that famous tournament there.
I can't really see, I mean, Arsenal maybe enjoying the visit of Celtic, but they probably would put on a decent performance if that was the case, because, you know, Scotland versus England in any form of sporting event is going to get people fired up for it. But I mean,
Ireland versus England shows.
Oh, of course. But I mean, the thing is, they're going to have another qualifying round to go through. It's not going to be against somebody terrible. I mean, This could get worse.
Don't know. I think we should have enough to beat Sadova, but to be fair, it's been a bad week and it could be a bad month. Or a bad 2 months.
Possibly. Well,
is this Celtic's gravy train coming to an end now after the last 5 or 6 years of domination? Are the cracks finally starting to appear? the Celtic way, or whatever it's called, is it? That was called the Celtic the way,
is the Celtic way.
Remember, I met you there after the one each draw, just bang smack in the middle of it last season.
You were getting attacked by Celtic fans. Oh wait,
no, that only happens at Rugby Park actually, because I've only seen it. In Gamba, we'll testament to that.
Yeah,
when,
I saw Celtic
1-0, Celtic fans were attacking a parked car. Well, a car who was trying to drive its way through, Celtic fans started attacking the car.
Yeah, Celtic ripped the license plate off and kicked the window. And the wing mirror off. They kicked the wing mirror off. That was
because it was funny. Because when we were in the pub after it, we were like talking, and obviously Gamba came in, and I was with all my cronies who were all buzzing and that. And then everybody was just moaning about Celtic fans. Then like I was just kind of look at Gamba and folk are like, "No, obviously you're all right, mate."
They didn't see me.
And then when I was at Regent, because that's when I was admin with Celtic fan coming out the ground. And then I was even Gamba kids, his own fans are scum. Tell them what happened with that motor. He's seen it with his own eyes. And then he's like, "Yeah. Ripped the license plate off and kicked the windscreen. No, kicked the fucking mirror." I was like, "Brilliant," but I refrain from those comments now. So it's not fair to tar a whole support like that over the mistakes of a couple of hundred idiots, is it?
Oh dear.
Apologies.
Small minority.
The minority government, man.
Minority report.
Anyway, moving on.
Do you want to move on? Are you all done with Celtic Lewis? Is there anything else you want to say?
I think I've totally bored the listeners, and I apologise because you'll be fed up with me just my nonsense. So let's talk about something that I do know about, which is the rest of Scottish football. And Norwegian football.
And Norwegian football. Yeah, we're going to go in chronological order from Thursday night. Hibs beaten 3-0 by Molde. Apparently completely unjustified, according to... Well, I don't think unjustified was the word that Lennon used, but said he thought that Hibs looked much better team.
As
I say, I've only been able to catch on the highlights and I've read a couple of match reports about it, but... And then, obviously, Michael Stewart's comments on Twitter as well, but the... Hibs did create some chances and stuff and looked okay, but we're going from one defensive crisis to another, and you just cannot expect to qualify for any tournament when you defend like that. I'm sorry, it was appalling. Every single one of the goals was a total schoolboy error. When I seen the first one, I was like, "Oh my god, like that's just horrendous!" just a ball coming in, and that was probably the best one.
Yes,
it just get bad to worse, and you can't defend like that, and especially when you're away in Europe and stuff. I almost admire teams that go and try to play attacking football all the time, but I mean, you've got to be pragmatic in Europe, so you've got to be tight at the back, and Hibs just certainly weren't. It was just they created some chances going forward, but that defensive display was absolutely appalling. And it's all right switching off once, you know. It seemed every time they did switch off, they conceded a goal, which is never a good combination. Of course, because sometimes you can get off with it, but it was just, and it was probably a case as well when Hibs went a goal behind, they were throwing everything at it. You know what I mean? Because they had to score, so. Maybe I'm doing them a bit of a disservice there in regards to say if they were over there, maybe having to defend a lead or something, it could have been different. But I would be very, very disappointed if I was a Hibs fan. But then again, Ryan Crombie was saying the other week there that a few of the Hibs fans that he knows were kind of angry about Lennon's team selection and stuff on Sunday against St Johnstone, saying that the league's a priority. So they've now got their wish anyway.
I'm sure they'll be delighted with a 3-0. It was quite interesting. Did you hear the Ian Murray quote?
Was it saying that
they look short in quality and have always lacked quality? It's very interesting.
Is this his kind of point that Lennon's kind of made the average group of players look very good or something? Is that what his point was? I mean, to be fair, I thought they looked a bit like, because I kind of watched the game. I watched it on possibly the worst stream I've ever watched any football game on. No commentary, and looked like it had been filmed in like a Motorola phone or something.
The Motorola Razor, man.
But I mean, I did think, like, now, to be fair, this will make any point I make here just not make sense, given I've just painted a picture of not being able to see the match. But no, I thought they looked a wee bit. I get that point where the point that maybe they're lacking a bit of depth in the team. I think McGinn was a massive miss last night. I think we can't underestimate how big a miss that will be to Hibs. But again, echo what Casey says about the defence. The defence is just, you're not gonna win many ties in Europe with a defence like that. And I think, although they were very impressive against Asteris, I think they got maybe a wee bit lucky as well in some respects. Although obviously going forward they definitely deserve to win, but I think defensively they've never looked comfortable in Europe this season. And it'll be interesting how that how that kind of translates to the league as well. If we'll maybe see that happen again, I reckon we probably will, to be honest with you, because it certainly does not impress me too much, that defence.
I'm really, just before we kind of go on and talk generally, I'm really, really disappointed that we've been robbed of Zenit against Hibs, considering that Zenit St. Petersburg scored 8 goals in their match last night.
Yeah, that game was absolutely insane. Like, I know I watched it, but just like, I had the updates on my phone, and like, it wasn't even that much of a surprise when it went to added time, although that was like mental as well. But it was like, alright, fair enough, Zenit are amazing. But then I just looked at my phone and it was like 8. I was like, what?
So what was the actual score in the Zenit game?
They won 8-1 on the night.
But
it was 4-0. It was 4-0 in 90 minutes. Oh, Zenit. No, was it 4 or 5?
It was 4-0, because each leg finished 4-0. And then Minsk went 1-0 up, and then Zenit scored 4 goals. But I'm quite sad I've been robbed of that game. Just like two teams that just can't defend and like scoring a lot of goals playing each other. Sad. I'm very sad for football. From a general point of view, I mean, it would have been very interesting to see if they'd gone into that game, obviously if they were able to get Malin and go into it with, you know, guys like McGeoch, McGinn, I mean, even Scott Allen. It would have been interesting to see if that had made a difference with them going forward, and if that changed the complexion of the tie, because obviously I think those guys are gonna stop most of those goals that go in. But it would have been interesting to see, you know, how the game would have played out if they'd been there for the first leg or the second leg. But just kind of in general, I mean, getting to that round was very, very impressive for Hibs.
I would say it was. I just assumed Kent would have said something. but I totally agree, particularly obviously that it's not their first season back in Europe, is it? I could sort of stubbed them in it after they won a Scottish Cup. But
Lennon was in charge of that for Brondby, so they had a wee bit of experience.
That's true. And they were unlucky against Brondby as well.
Penalties.
They done well. It's just disappointing. And I knew that I just couldn't see Hibs doing it ever, to be honest. Just, you've got to win your home games, kind of stuff. And when they went over there in the NH, I was never ever confident that they would do it. And I don't mean to disrespect him, that listens knows how highly I rate Hibs, but it's just the same story. Not that they've disappointed them, because they've not, as we're just talking about how well they've done, but they just, obviously I was romanticising the idea of having Hibs in the group stages, which would have been phenomenal, but well, even getting to play Zenit or something like that, what a mental tie that would be. But it's just never to be, and it's disappointing. So hopefully both Rangers and Celtic can get into the group stages, and I think that would make for some interesting reading for the rest of the season.
I think that's maybe the point we're trying to make here, is that obviously, in European terms, that defence is just not good enough, but there's no disputing that Hibs have overachieved this season in Europe. Being a team like Asteris from a league like Greece, no matter how many Rangers fans they want to, or were posting that stuff about Maribor or ranked higher or whatever, the Greek league is what, the 14th, 15th best league in Europe. It is a very, very good league, and for them to even get to this stage deserves a lot of plaudits. And again, Mulder, they're no mugs, so they're a very decent outfit, so I don't think there's any shame. It's just worth pointing out, obviously, that you're playing at this level and you have aspirations of getting anywhere further than, I think, defensively you need to sort that out.
Also, and again, just what I thought about defensively, and I seen that actually Ambrose kind of did fill in it right back. I don't know whether it was maybe right centre back, and now I know exactly what Len was talking about when he says, have you ever seen Effie try to cross the ball, see that cross he puts in and it gets but it ends up actually kind of sneaking in at the back stick, and somebody keeps it alive because the keeper's like, it was a horrendous ball in, but then again it ends up actually kind of falling in the 6 yard box. But it was more to do with absolutely atrocious goalkeeping, but when I seen that I was like, Jesus,
he wasn't really bombing forward either, he was kind of, he was just keeping back, and I think, obviously, I assume Lennon's probably said.
So obviously I listened to the podcast last week and just had to remind everybody, didn't I?
Is there anything else we want to touch on Hibs?
No.
Okay. Let's go to Rangers then. Rangers nothing each last night with Maribor winning 3-1 on aggregate. We talked about how many cliches we're gonna fit in here for this section, but Maribor are no mugs. That's not an easy place to go, and to set up shop like that and get a nothing each is a fantastic, fantastic result. So it's good tactical awareness by Steven Gerrard. Right, there's five. that is an absolutely fantastic result, because I mean, we should know, especially Celtic fans, Lewis, getting through against Maribor is not easy.
This is something I'm going to dispute, and I'm not going to dispute it because I'm a Celtic fan, or a bitter Celtic fan at that. Every time that a Scottish team has played Maribor, out with no exception probably being Aberdeen, I'd say they've not been at their best. Hibs, when they played them, were certainly not at their best. Celtic were definitely not their best. Rangers were not at their best when they originally played them.
So that was certainly not a very good Rangers team.
No, Aberdeen were actually quite unlucky against them, but I think that's the one exception. But again, obviously Maribor are a top outfit, but I think the fact that their record, obviously their record is exceptional against Scottish teams, but I just don't think it tells the full story if you just look at the stats.
Possibly. However.
Okay.
However, Rangers have actually beaten them, which, is good.
Well, beating them comfortably as well.
Brilliant for Rangers. Obviously, as old cliches goes, was a very tough place to go.
Yes, and now no longer. Sheet.
So I've just repeated those cliches. But no, honestly, it was class for them. I didn't obviously get to catch the game because we had our own match, and us two were wearing staunch bright orange strips as well, so it must have been something in there that night that both were successful. But no, as I've said, it's great for that, and I really, really hope Rangers can get into the group stages, because it'd be class. And when you consider the European horror show they had last year and stuff, for them to get into Europa League and Gerrard's kind of first-class manager, it's brilliant. When the league is a priority, Rangers, and I don't mean the league is and they should be winning it, regardless of whether Rangers fans want to say that or not, the league's priority is to get closer to Celtic and put up a challenge, but for them to potentially have European football until Christmas at the very least would be absolutely unbelievable achievement already.
I think to get closer to Celtic, but you're probably going to need to have runs like this in Europe.
The same way, obviously, if I were a Rangers fan, I'd be wanting European football 100%. But then again, nobody wants to get into that routine of playing Thursday, Sunday. But that goes for Celtic as well, by the way, when it's coming to it. And I think it was it Hamish that made the point in the chat? Obviously, Hibs, obviously, I'm lucky not to get in. But if all three teams would get in, it'd be bizarre seeing, what is it, 50% of Scottish Premiership fixtures played on a Sunday every other week. would be quite funny. But no, listen, be class. Like, if I was a Rangers fan, I'd 100% be wanting Europe, particularly when the priority has been the league. But it's still got to be difficult. But as I say, Celtic's got to be in the exact same scenario. So you never know. But everybody complains, and it looks like a horrible, you know, just that Thursday to Sunday kind of always does look a bit of a killer. But then again, me being a Kilmarnock fan, I'd cut off my left arm to have that kind of that kind of footballing show. I think Rangers have got a right good chance of getting European football up until Christmas.
I think they've got a great chance. I think the way they're set up is just perfect for European football. I think obviously the fact that they've not went behind in any of the games, that's been the start that's been trotted out by most of the kind of mainstream outlets, but it's an unbelievable start when you consider the amount of games they've played already just in the qualifiers, and how difficult it actually can be. I think they deserve immense credit getting to where they are now. I think they have a great chance given I don't know too much about UEFA.
Nobody does, because I believe this is their first season in Europe.
Unless
you watch a lot of Russian football.
Struggled against Progress, so surely they can't. Jesus. They cannot be that good. But no, I think with Rangers, I think they've got a great chance. They're set up ideally for European football, and I think I'll put my neck in the line here. I think I'll be surprised if they don't get to the group stages.
Well, see as you're saying there, Kev, absolutely spot on with how well they're set up for European football, and for me, that's a big difference. Because everybody knows how highly I rate Rodgers, right? And I'm not trying to compare Rodgers and Gerrard here already. But you've already seen two sides to Gerrard. I mean, in Sunday there, they went out and battled St Mirren for the full game. You know what I mean? And, let's say, could have won by more. And they played, again, the majority of the game with 10 men. So, but they're so pragmatic and they're so much harder to break down. Obviously, that's a lot to do with a kind of settled partnership with Katic and Goldson in the centre halves. But no, I think that's the beauty of Gerrard already. He's got to he'll change his system whenever he needs to. He's not got to be stubborn and stick to the one style of play all the time. Because I think you'll see obviously similar tactics to when they play Celtic. But I think that'll work. Obviously, Ibrox will be a bit different because they'll want to have a go. But it'll be a nice mix, and I think that'll be impressive for Gerrard, because it'll not be a one trick pony. That was the problem with Warburton. He was too stubborn in his style that wasn't getting him anywhere. Cassinha was just a mess. I don't even know what his style was. I don't know what his favourite system was. And for the minute Gerrard get appointed, I'm really looking forward to see how they actually do get on, to see the big difference. Because regardless of what people say about inexperience and that, I mean, the football that guy's, his football big game experience that he's went through, I'm really, really excited to see how he gets on with Rangers.
I think, see, the key thing you said there was that the partnership between Katic and Goldson, I think that's just so huge for them. Because you look at even this last season, I mean, who are the main two centre backs for Rangers? Russell Martin.
Bates, Martin, no, you had McCrory, Bates, McCrory, he's played at position. Martin, Alves, it could have been any one of those four, you know, any combination of those four, excuse me. But as you say, now those two guys are arguably the first names in the team sheet for Rangers, which is a massive, massive thing. Again, no comparing Kilmarnock to Rangers, but for Clark's come in, that's been the big difference for us. It's see having a settled back four and knowing what you're up, it makes a power of a difference. I don't care what Andy says. However, we're just slating Celtic there. Celtic put them out. But that's because Celtic are improving on it. Like, whereas when you get a good team and you're playing the same back four, that's what improves, and it's stuff to build on, build for the back. Whereas let's say Celtic, I've had the same four or five defenders, well, same three or four defenders for the last 4 or 5 years, and additions here and there, but none of the combinations have worked. That's the big mistake. Whereas Goldson and Carthage look to be a right good settled partnership.
See, I wouldn't even say that to kind of bring this full circle with Celtic. I don't even say Celtic have had a kind of settled back four, although I get obviously the point we're making earlier on about how it's barely changing that time. But you look at the guys Celtic have, Boyata, injury prone, Simunovic injury prone,
Svechenko injury prone,
probably not ready, Henry not really ready, Lustig injury prone, all these guys are in and out of the team, so it's hard for it to be a settle back four.
Exactly. Obviously we've not especially seen with two. Celtic changing for a three to a, yeah, to a back three to a back four, two centre halves, whatever. It's never a good combo to consistently change that.
Yeah, I think Rangers have just got it spot on this year already, and I, like you, I think it'll be very interesting to see how some of the bigger league games pan out this season. But so far in Europe, I think they're set up like just perfectly, and I'll be surprised if they don't reach the group stages.
Okay, I've got as I've been looking through the archives. Do you want to know, or do you know when the last time two Scottish teams qualified for the group stage of a European competition was?
Is it 12? Oh my goodness. 2011?
No, it would have been. No. Was it not like
Champions League?
2007, 2008.
Oh, it's not that far back, surely.
I'm telling you, I think it would be.
2009. Tony Mowbray got Celtic into Europa League, the inaugural Europa League group stages.
And Rangers and
were in the Champions League.
With Man United, was that in Bursaspor and stuff? Was that season?
That was 2010-11. Rangers.
So what would that one be?
That was Sevilla, Unaria as a Cheney, and
I can't remember the last. Because I always thought for some reason Unaria was a qualifier, but I wasn't thinking right there. Aye, definitely, it was a group stage.
There you go. I mean, almost 10 years since we've had two Scottish teams in the group stages.
Mm-hmm. You've jinxed it.
I have jinxed it. Here's another one. 2011-12 is quite a strange season because the champions never made it into European group stages, but the team that finished second did.
Ooh, interesting.
We won't see that this season.
If
Rangers finished third, that would be a first. If Celtic went out in the next round and Rangers qualified, the team that finished third in the league qualifying for Europe and the rest of them out, that would be astounding. Right, anyway, do you want to stop the Europe chat? Do you want to move on?
Aye, Brexit, man.
Hell yeah. This is what we're talking about. Football made in this country. That's right. Homegrown. Right. Callum, since we've got you here, Sunday, 12:30, Kilmarnock Rangers.
Yes.
Now, obviously, Rangers have got this Thursday, Sunday thing already down. Yeah. Do you think that'll play into it?
Yes, I do think it will. I don't care what this is. It's got to have an impact in the game. That for me isn't saying that Kilmarnock's got to. I do think I've for some reason I'm pretty confident that we'll definitely compete. I know that for sure, but I've got a wee feeling inside of me telling me that we'll win. I hope we do. However, the longer the game goes on, I certainly do not fancy Kilmarnock's chances in penalty kicks. As you won't be aware, that I'm sort of like boughing record for the spot, and it was just epitomised in that St Mirren game, and they just, it was like, but see, in fairness, that St Mirren game just shows how much a kind of joke this bonus point thing really is. I mean, big Broadfoot stepping up to hit like the third penalty, you're like, people were laughing in the home end, but everybody knew that it was just a pure basket case, and it was just like, alright, you want me to go up and hit a penalty? Like, there was just no structure to it at all, and that. But I'm really looking forward to the game on Sunday. I'm potentially meeting Mr. Craig Gamble as well for a couple of pints pre-game. I'm looking forward to it. When I was in the Kelly shop yesterday, because I wasn't initially going to go because obviously my Sunday league commitments, but I've decided to go to the Kamarnock game instead and just get somebody else to run it for the sidelines on Sunday. But I was in the Kelly shop and I was asking how well the tickets have been selling, because anybody knows, I mean, our away support has actually always been half decent against Old Firm, well, more so Rangers than Celtic. But for the Celtic, a cup competition, I think we take a decent support. But our home support's usually pretty poor against Old Firm at any kind of time of year. We kind of, people don't turn up to games. But it said the tickets were selling very well. So either there's a lot of belief around Kilmarnock, or the more plausible example is that Rangers fans are buying tickets in the Kelly, which I probably think's got to be accurate.
Or the ticket office are lying to you.
No, because, well, to be fair...
they wouldn't do that, Lewis.
No.
To be fair, I wouldn't... Don't get me wrong, I don't take a lot of things. I don't trust a lot of... I don't
trust
a lot of...
Mainstream outlets.
No, I don't trust a lot of kind of what I hear in Kelly shops, etc.
What's the media want you to see?
Just like pretty.
What can we want you to think?
Not even like there's some kind of PR conspiracy, more to do with just ignorance and whatever. But
you go about Kelly wearing the glasses from They Live, you can just see everything as it really is. Man.
What film was that again? Because that was in
Roddy Piper. They've got the 6-minute fight sequence.
Genius. But anyway, I'm not saying it's any PR conspiracy. Any PR conspiracy, Kilmarnock. More to do with just like people not really know how some shit works. But I do believe that the tickets have been selling well. But as I say, it's more likely, I think probably Rangers fans have been buying tickets in Kilmarnock. But I hope not, and I hope it's a very healthy Kilmarnock support, and maybe even healthier if the rumours about Malumbu coming back are true.
What percentage would you give for that in Hartman?
I've always said from day one that I had a feeling that he would be back, and I think that the longer it goes on is good, and no news is good news, as they say. Because you think a guy like that, he would have had his club lined up with him, so more and more it points to he'll potentially become back to Kilmarnock. Who knows? A lot of Kelly fans I read maybe too much into it. I mean, he liked the club's tweet today, Steve Clark's press.
That's the ultimate sign. If there's an Instagram like on that as well, then it's basically signed.
Well, who knows? But then again, I mean, I could like... No, it doesn't matter. I was going to commit a horrible derogatory sentence there, but I will not repeat that. I've got to make some kind of joke about liking a female's tweet doesn't mean I will... Whatever, Malumbu, I really hope that these suspicious likes that appear to be popping up are paving the way to his return to Kilmarnock. However, he could be just be a very, very nice guy. I don't know. I hope to God that
but if he's the nicest guy going, he'll surely resign. Here's one. You know, I hate it when you see, you know, someone going about with the man that you built. Do you know what I mean? Will we see Koulibaly in action against Celtic?
I do not believe so. I think that Mr. Koulibaly is who knows? I mean, I've read he's pretty toxic property at the moment. And not toxic, like he's a toxic person, as in people, I don't know if people want to take the risk and sign him in case he gets slapped by a massive UEFA kind of
a C on style.
Aye, a FIFA ban due to his controversial move to Egypt. But I would be I'd be quite hurt. I know that I'm dying for Koulibaly to come back or anything. Like, I don't think I would need him, but I don't think it would hurt having a player of his kind of quality, because I don't think he'd be looking for a lot of money in that, and he loves Kilmarnock. But I would be quite disappointed if he was to sign for another team, particularly somebody like Thistle, whereas I still think he could do the job in the Premiership.
Lewis, Celtic going up against Thistle on Saturday. I don't think, just off the top of my head, I don't have my notes down in front of me, but I think it's the 90s since Celtic last lost to Thistle. Am I right in thinking that?
We probably were not born. I've no idea. I think this is the perfect game, isn't it, for Celtic, just to get back and into the swing of things, not to try to be the disrespectful to Partick Thistle, who are obviously will be right up for it, but I think from a Celtic point of view you'll be expecting a reaction, and I think given the record as the unknown record, as you kind of point out, I think it should be Celtic should win comfortably, surely.
Are there any other fixtures you guys want to pick out?
Dunfermline Hearts,
I think that's a tasty one. Then again, I thought Dunfermline County last week would have been, then Dunfermline just totally ruined my coupon after County absolutely bodied them at East End Park. But I think that will be a tasty game.
How much a big crowd for that?
Yeah, yeah,
Hearts have filled their allocation apparently, so.
And Dunfermline as well, see the numbers Dunfermline pull in, it shows how big a club they actually are. And they'd be a welcome addition back into the top flight if and when they get there. I would look out for that. Obviously, Hearts never looked too pretty in the group stages, and then obviously ended it with absolutely hammering Inverness 5-0. But I think that was probably down to John Robertson lying down to Hearts. There you go, you heard that here first, Robbo. Ah, of course, I'm only joking. but I mean, I've got a wee feeling Dunfermline will do something tomorrow. I fancy Dunfermline at least take it the extra time.
How much hope are we giving here? Away to Dundee.
I hope a great chance, surely. Against that Dundee defence, unpredictable Dundee defence.
Big shank.
Dundee have just signed somebody today as well, haven't they? Is this the boy that
Sky Sports thought was playing in Turkey because he played for Inter Turku?
Yeah.
He played in Inter Turku, who are from Finland, not from Turkey.
Benjamin Kalman, or Kalman maybe, allegedly one of Finnish's hottest properties, so should be quite interesting. Big striker as well, that's my kind of problem. I'd say I like Musa, but he just doesn't score enough goals. And it's not clear to see after his absolutely woeful attempt last week against Aberdeen, when comes onto his left foot and he just skies it into the stand. But it's interesting, you know, this guy goes on. I don't know whether international clearance that through means he'll get his debut, but Ayr should fancy our chances, but I don't know, it's just I think Dundee will just do the business and try and get their season on track.
Oh, Shankland's be at Dens Park another time this season, maybe.
Who knows, maybe Shankland will be watching from the stands.
It's cup tied. Even though he scored like what, 12 goals or something, man.
A million goals, man. but no, should be an interesting one.
So, boys, what other fixtures are you liking to look at? Queen of the South, St Johnston, why?
I saw Queen of the South on Tuesday and they were hopeless until they brought on Stephen Dobie. So
the man is an absolute baller. I mean,
he was different class when he came on. It's just like, it's such a weird one with Queens. I know it's such a cliche probably at this point, and I'm sure their fans are just totally fed up of pundits or idiots like us just constantly talking about it, Dobie and all that. But like, honest, just watching that game on Tuesday night, it was so painfully obvious that they were just such an average team. And then when he came on, he just totally changed the game. Like, his finishing is just unreal. Like, if he starts, and I fancy Queens, I think. Maybe pull off a wee upset.
I'm going through the fixtures here. Right, Livingston Motherwell. What's happening?
Is it at the Tony Macaroni? Yep.
It is at the Tony Macaroni.
That's
the biggest shit fest of them all.
Motherwell struggle there. As I say, and I'm not dwelling too much on the pitch, I think that the pitch will affect teams going there this season, but I've got to give you a bit of credit. I mean, I wrote them off quite early, thinking, you know what I mean, they shouldn't be here, but like, it was like a dream, but not even a dream, because there were no expectations of getting up, you know. It was just, they kept doing, they got into the playoffs, and then just kept going through, and then ended up taking Thistle down. But so there was no expectancy for them to come up, and it was a bit of a shock to the system. You can see that with Hopkin. I mean, when Hopkin left and stuff, like, it was just totally bizarre. But they're well drilled, really well set up. A few teams will struggle there this year. Kenny Miller still looks like he's got it. He started off against us quite slow, and then we're kind of slagging him and stuff, and then he grew into the game, and he was brilliant. He was really, really good. He's coming quite deep and spreading the play quite a lot. I'll hold my hands up and apologise to any Livingston fans listening. I said before that I thought they were certainty to finish at the foot of the table, but no, I don't think it'll be as straightforward as that this year. I think they'll be a right hard team to play against.
There's one Livingston fan that listens, isn't it? Unofficial Livy. He's been taking a body count. Tom's already there, so you're trying to you're just getting the damage control in early.
Gone three at the back, five at the back. Sorry, damage limitation. No, I genuinely do think.
Is that St Johnston?
Oh, what's St Johnston at?
What, five at the back?
Oh, right, aye, against Kilmarnock.
Like, actually, five at the back.
Aye, no. See, speaking from a manager's perspective now, that I'm a manager and that. But, like, because I like playing five, but I like playing three centre-halves and two wing-backs. Because just get folk up and down all day. But, like, St Johnston actually played, like, a flat five against us.
Yeah.
I don't know, hey, I loved it, man. It was surreal, man. Just that.
You felt like Celtic or something?
Aye, it was good, man.
Felt good.
Aye, man. Aberdeen St Mirren.
Groan. Move on.
Groan.
Hibs Ross County.
Groan, man. That fixture's been played about a million times in the cup the last 3 years.
This is the new Twitter handle derby. What, sorry?
I think County will beat Hibs.
What makes you think that?
Thursday, Sunday.
Thursday, Sunday, obviously, of course.
No, I just think that, don't know. I just, fair play to John. And hey, County's business has been brilliant again. I mean, was it they just signed Don Cowie as well?
Aye, they did.
You know what I mean? That's. But I was, see, when I heard he was getting released for Hearts, I was kind of half thinking about, I think he might be doing a shift at Kelly and then signed for Ross County in the Championship. So, no, I've got a wee feeling that they will. They'll certainly be competitive with Hibs. No, it's Easter Road though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Hibs are a good cup team as well, so you need to factor that.
How much has that changed recently then?
Because of Europe.
What?
No,
I mean, like, when you're saying Hibs are a cup team, for years we just slated them about when the cups and that.
Ah, true.
Mind the cup, did they not get put at the Scottish Cup when Ross County were in the second tier? When they were rebuilding Easter Road. I think that was a thing that happened. I can't say for definite, which is great for a podcast, but.
Well, kind of Derek Adams, Ross County side,
yeah.
Michael
Garden. No.
Garden, man. Who knows?
But it may have been pre-Garden.
Maybe.
pretty good. Maybe.
So,
man.
So
BC, man. Game... BG.
So because that game that happened 10 years ago, I think I'll tip Ross County here.
Yeah, I'm going to tip Hibs. I think you're all daft here. You're all buying into the Ross County hype here. Johnny's no, hype. Average team.
Highland bias. Highland bias. But no, I just think. Listen, mate, it's all just into the Thursday Sunday for me, you know what I mean? Speaking as a manager, I'm not looking forward to getting into Sunday's game either. It's not a good combo. But I've just got a wee feeling, which doesn't really account for much. I've had feelings about many things which haven't came to fruition, so I just try to cause a bit of debate as well, basically, in Ross County.
Do you think Lennon might fishing. Rest his team? Given they rested quite a lot of it against St Johnston.
Aye, I do.
I know they obviously not get Europe anymore, but just thinking maybe a few players tired the legs.
Hopefully we see Effie Ambrose in right wing or something. crossing balls a million miles in the air straight into the back of the 6 yard box. No, but Dave, I do genuinely think that he will rest his players. I just think just because they're travelling and stuff, I think there'll definitely be a few changes to the team, absolutely no doubt about that for me.
Do you mind when Neil Lennon brought in Effie Ambrose at first, Lewis, when he played him as a midfielder, right, and he was just wrecking people?
What?
This is like his first few games where he would play him as like a holding mid, and he would just dribble through people. It was incredible.
Dictate the game, man.
Aye.
I'm in Brun, man. Just keep who was ticking over.
Who was it? I think it was Raith Rovers. Celtic beat them like 4-0.
I remember that. 4-1.
The man was absolutely incredible.
I've got absolutely no recollection of that whatsoever. That's just.
I'm gonna say Hooper scored like all the goals that night, and just Ambrose just like was robbed the man of the match.
just get on about that. When I was brought up my brother-in-law, could you just imagine him talking to Lennon? Like, have you ever seen Effie cross ever? However, have you ever seen him dictate a game for the middle of the park? There's something to think about. Anyway, I will not be happy unless I see Effie Ambrose not playing at either centre half or right back. Further up the park than centre back or right back, that's the conclusion that we've came to.
Free Effie, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you need creative players like that to go in the ball more, and do you know what I mean? And you've got to have that.
Feed Effie and he will score.
Yeah. Effie up top, man, that'd be genius, man.
Pingles up too.
Hey, you scored a few goals.
Genuinely would work. Genuinely would work.
I thought you said it would work there.
Would? Aye.
It would work.
Yeah, would work. Because he's good with his feet.
Stop talking about a techie class here and woodwork, man, every 2 seconds. just reminds me of that. Even a worse shout was, I've told Kemp that story many times, Scotland, Croatia, Czech Republic, right. Sorry, two each.
Oh,
remember when we got done by the dubious referee and stuff? There was a guy behind me getting Levine absolute pelters all game, which I was alright with, can't mean I'm not that. It was funny. And then there wasn't much happening up top, and then he was absolutely screaming for Levine to put Darren Fletcher up front. I was just like, what? I heard him saying to his pal, because it wasn't Stephen Fletcher he was talking about, because Stephen Fletcher either wasn't in the squad, or he was playing.
Fletcher had the thing as well with Levine, he fell out with him.
So it wasn't even what he was talking about him, because he's like, why would Darren Fletcher not do a job up there? It wasn't even like getting mixed up. You're like, Darren Fletcher up top, what are you talking about, man? I could see the explanation to be like, Ken, what? See things on the work, put him at centre half, just let him have the game in front of him, man. If we need to go for it, put somebody else in midfield, put Fletcher back and let him just defend and play for there, man. But you're like, up top, what are you talking about, man? And that was me at like 15 year old, just being like, what is this guy actually talking about? Is that how people view football when they're 25, 30 year older than me? I don't know, man.
That's how every Scotland fan behind you at the games views football, it seems, anytime you're at Hampden.
It's just...
Also, get some absolute fucking clown that just never watched a game of football in their life, just comment on the game.
As I say, it's a type that I've brought up the podcast before, guys that do not actually support like any kind of real football team either.
So give me like, where you go from this?
No, just like when you meet guys up there, and then like when I was younger, I used to try and kind of talk to people at Scotland games. But oh, who do you support? No, like, oh no, either I just follow Scotland, or
I'm like, right.
I know, you're not just like kind of like people that they know your Kelly fans, Dundee fans, even Rangers and Celtic fans. They're just like, nah, these guys don't know what football is, man. They do not know. Apologies for going on a
front. We've kind of got the younger generation time of that that probably will follow a club but don't watch football because they just play FIFA. Mm. At which Dan Fletcher up front would make sense because, you know,
he's tall.
It works in Ultimate Team.
Oh my god.
I don't know. Well, either this guy's maybe just a tactical genius, man. I'm not giving him the credit for it, man. As they say, I mean, profits aren't understood in their own time and all that stuff, innit?
Mm, true.
Maybe years later we'll be talking back saying, why did we never give Darren Fletcher a chance up front for Scotland? You know what I mean? Things could have been so much different.
Was Charlie Mulgrew not a striker when he was coming through at Celtic?
Oh my god.
They played basically every position but for Celtic, didn't they?
I'm sure he was, but I could be wrong. But we seem to like just bring through strikers at youth level and then just turn them into left backs.
Who else done that again? Martin. No, was it Gary O'Connor said that Scott Brown was a striker originally come through Hibs?
My god.
I don't know if he was an out and out striker, but see, when he did come through at Hibs, he was like pretty attacking. Eh?
He was a winger, wasn't he?
He played like right mid and stuff, but yeah. I'm sure in the Simon Ferry interview, but I mean when he was come through, as in when he was come through at like 16s and that, he was a striker, and I was like, that's like the most bizarre thing that I've ever heard in my life. But don't know, mind you, there's been a lot of things brought into question about Gary O'Connor's interview with Simon Ferry. It was very good, but the Russians hit back at him and all that for his and he basically said they were doping and all that. It was quite funny, so
right, so Effie Ambrose in midfield, Scott Brown and Darren Fletcher up front.
Boyd at centre half, man.
Right, yes, Boyd and Chris Sutton at centre half.
Oh yes. Oh, Brexit, man. Right, hard working, man. Kenny Miller in nets, man. I don't.
Hey, at least we'd play for the back if we'd have in nets.
Ah, true.
Anyway, I just apologise to the listeners because I've just went well off on a tangent, you know. But I still need folk to know that somebody was actually screaming out to play Darren Fletcher up top at a Scotland game, and I'm not making it up.
Don't I leave on that note?
I'm content.
So Lewis, you've got all the vitriol out of your system from the Celtic game.
Yeah, and again, I will apologise for my outburst earlier on. But if yes, it's all in my system, so you won't need to hear any.
If you've made it through our rants and then you've made it through us talking about fucking Dan Fletcher playing up for that, you're a very special type of person. So thank you, Callum Scott. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much again. Obviously, I think I've just got my manager hat on here, trying to try out different systems and stuff, and experiment with players in different positions. Hence, my antics in tonight's podcast. So, but again, I appreciate to any listener who skipped through. I just think it's been quite funny and all right. But you know what it's like. Just need to apologise in case people thought weren't they take this serious enough. But we went off in many tangents. But I've really enjoyed being part of the podcast this evening.
Cute man. I think it's my debut this year. But I will. Right, anyway. That's it. Hopefully you'll get this probably Friday night or possibly Saturday. Who knows? Before the games or after the games when you know what's happened and this part of the podcast has been irrelevant. And we will speak to you later. Goodbye.